This is Audible.
Warhammer Adventures, Realm Quest, Book 3, Forest of the Ancients. Written by Tom Huddleston and read by Billy Piper. The Mortal Realms. Each of the Mortal Realms is a world unto itself, steeped in powerful magic. Seemingly infinite in size, there are endless possibilities for discovery and adventure. Floating cities and enchanted woodlands, noble beings and dread beasts beyond imagination. But in every corner of the realms, battles rage between the armies of order and the forces of chaos. This century's long war must be won if the realms are to live in peace and freedom. Prologue. 7 months ago. The kitchen was deep in shadows, the house around them as silent as a crypt. They rifled through the cupboards as quietly as they could, Thanis and little white-haired Marlowe stuffing anything edible into the cloth sacks they carried. It was an old place, crumbling and ramshackle like most buildings in the city of Lifestone, notable only for a large painted sign outside. Donziger, it had read. Mystic botanist. Trespassers will suffer. But only Marlowe could read it, and even he didn't know what half the words meant, so they'd broken in anyway, finding a loose window on the ground floor. It was their first stroke of luck, and also their last. Thanis didn't enjoy thieving. But what choice did she have? The scraps needed to eat. That was what their little gang called themselves. They were the leftovers of Lifestone, orphans and runaways. They were all young and all poor, but they were a family of sorts, and they watched each other's backs. Still, it was no way to live. The future had been on Thanis's mind a lot lately, the knowledge that she was growing up fast and had no prospects besides stealing. She dreamed of doing something that mattered, bringing good into the world. She'd wanted to join the Lifestone Defenders. She was the right age, and she had the muscle. But they wouldn't take a street rat like her. Her fear was that she'd end up in one of the big gangs, the Scarlet Shadow or the Rotten Angels, beating people up for money. She'd rather starve. She was so lost in thought that she didn't see the stack of plates until she'd already blundered into them. The sound was deafening. A clatter that could surely be heard all through the house. Marlowe turned, his eyes wide as moons. Thanis winced apologetically. She wasn't just getting too old for this life. She was getting too big and clumsy too. A door creaked. For a moment they froze. Then Thanis sprang into action, shouldering her sack and bolting for the window. She tried to help Marlowe up, his hands scrabbling on the sill, but a voice called out, "Don't move!" And she pulled him down as something thudded into the wall overhead, a throwing axe. Thanis gulped. The place had looked so run down, she'd been expecting a couple of house servants at most. But whoever this was, they meant business. She peered over the counter. Two men stood in the doorway, grasping sturdy pikes. They were clad from head to toe in peculiar armour. Padded leather gloves, shin guards and helmets and breastplates patterned with a four-leafed flower surrounding a mouth filled with thorns.
"Come out," one called, "or we'll have to wake our master. Trust me, you don't want that."
They snickered, and Thanis felt a chill. What was this place? Marlowe tugged her sleeve, pointing a trembling finger.
Look, over there.
In the corner, almost hidden by the shadows, a small trapdoor was set into the floor. Some sort of waste disposal, Thanis suspected. She nodded and they scrambled over, the stairs creaking behind them as the guards advanced. Marlowe lifted the hatch. Below it, all was blackness. A narrow brick-lined tunnel leading straight down. Thanis peered in, wondering if this was really the best idea.
Then another axe hit the floor nearby and she shoved Marlow in, the boy tumbling into the dark. She jumped down after him, the walls closing on all sides. A thought leapt into her mind. What if they narrowed so much that they were trapped, stuck here like rats in a chimney? Then she crashed through another trapdoor, seeing Marlow's startled face in lamplight as she landed in something warm and sticky. She breathed a sigh and looked around. They were in a large metal container, and Thanis stifled a cry as she realised it was filled with wriggling shapes, some sort of larvae, fat and faintly glowing like squishy white ghosts. Lots of them had been flattened as she fell, and they were leaking luminous yellow slime. She helped Marlow up, and then she heaved herself out. Why would anyone need all these disgusting grubs? Maybe the breeding insects, Marlow said, wiping the slime from his face. Or they could be feeding something bigger. Thanis shuddered. We need to get out of here. They were in a long corridor with soft purple walls. They could hear the guards' voices coming from up above. They couldn't follow the children through the chute. Not in that padded armour. But if they took it off... She picked a direction, tugging Marlow through a swinging door into another corridor with arched entrances on both sides. It curved right and they followed, through a shadowed hall and into yet another corridor. The house was bigger than it had looked from the outside. Bigger than it had any right to be. I wish Casper was here, Marlow said as they ran. He's the best thief in the city. This wouldn't have happened to him. I'm trying my best, Thanis said. Anyway, Casper's been gone for days. No one knows where he is. Marlow looked up in surprise. But I thought he was your best friend. He is, Thanis said, tight-lipped. And I'm sure he's fine. Wherever he's got to. They could hear shouts behind them. The guards hadn't given up the chase. They climbed a set of winding steps, losing their bearings entirely. Then Thanis shoved through a final door and skidded to a halt, taking a startled breath. Marlow came up behind her, his mouth dropping open. The ceiling of the space they'd stumbled into was several stories high and made of large glass panes, all locked in a steel frame. Through it, Thanis could see the distant moon and beneath that a line of trees, a way out. Where the sloping roof met the ground, she could even see a door standing open. The problem was that between them and the exit was what could only be described as a jungle. A mass of foliage rising towards the roof, festooned with vines and creepers and huge flowers of a sickly yellow colour that made her eyes hurt. A path ran through the tangle of trunks, but she was reluctant to take it. These plants looked... Well, she couldn't explain it, but they looked... wrong. Thanis had lived in Lifestone all her life, never setting foot outside the city walls. Bricks and stone she knew and trusted, growing things were beyond her comprehension. People who left the city got eaten by dire wolves or lost in swamps, and she had no desire for that to happen to her. Marlow tugged her hands as shouts rose behind them. Come on, he said. It's not far. They pushed into the undergrowth, parting the fronds like nervous explorers. There was a rustle, and Thanis's head snapped round. Did something just move? Vines snaked across the path and nodding stems loomed on every side, topped with golden night blooms bigger than cartwheels. The air was sickly sweet, with a smell like boiled honey and rotting meat. Then the rustling came again, and this time she saw what made it. One of the vines on the path slithered away as though guarding itself from her blundering feet. Marlow saw it too and gulped. Do you think they're dangerous? Thanis frowned. They're plants. They can't hurt us, right? What about the Sylvaneth? Marlow asked. They're plants, and I heard they talk and walk and...
What is the meaning of this?
A voice boomed just in front of them. They ducked back, hearts racing.
What are you doing in here, disturbing my beauties?
We discovered thieves in the kitchen, your masterfulness,
another voice said, and Thanis saw the pair of guards approaching.
We think they came this way.
She peered through the fronds. A man stood by the glass door, wearing a long green robe. His fleshy face was pink with anger as he confronted the guards. They must have taken a different path, she realised, one that didn't lead straight through the jungle. She looked at their padded armour and wondered. It was all starting to make some kind of disturbing sense. Thieves?
The man barked, spittle flying from his lips.
Didn't they see my sign?
Then he smiled.
Ah,
but perhaps this is for the good. My darlings haven't had a good feed for some time, have you? Had to survive on these filthy flesh grubs. He reached into his robe, pulling out a handful of larvae, and tossed them into the undergrowth. The plants twitched hungrily. Thanis glanced towards the door. Through it, she could see an open lawn and a wall just low enough to vault over. But how to get past without being seen? There was a shout, and one of the guards spun round. A tendril had snaked from the bushes, brushing his neck. He raised his pike, but the old man held him back.
They won't strike unless provoked!
Thanis bit her lip. An idea was forming, a terrible idea, but the only one she had. Pressing a finger to her lips, she led Marlowe forwards, trying not to disturb the plants rising around them. Now they were just a short distance from the door and almost in view of the guards.
When I say go, she whispered, run as fast as you can.
Marlowe nodded silently. Thanis felt her heart thump. This was either the bravest thing she'd ever done in her life or the stupidest.
With a roar, she leapt to her feet, throwing herself at the nearest guard and shoving him with all her might. He yelled in surprise as he tumbled into the wall of plants, his pike clattering to the floor. The effect was sudden and startling. Tendrils writhed like furious serpents wrapping around the guard's arms as he struggled to free himself. He shrieked as Moore lashed around his ankles, yanking him off his feet. Thanis could never be sure of what happened next. She had the impression of a great yellow flower opening like a mouth, ringed with thorns pulsating horribly. The guard vanished inside. There was a wet gulping sound and a single scream quickly silenced.
Go!
She shouted as Marlowe scrambled for the door. The second guard was turning, lowering his pike to defend himself, but more creepers spiralled from the undergrowth, suckers latching onto his padded breastplate. The old man raised his hands, crying a string of mystical syllables that jarred on Thanis' ears as she shoved Marlowe forwards. She could feel the night air on her face. They were going to make it. Then a tendril lashed from the bushes, grasping onto Marlowe's exposed arm. He tried to pull away, but the vine had taken hold, bulbs of stinging venom bursting onto his skin. The tendril tightened, and he was tugged off his feet, dragged away from the open doorway. Thanis grabbed his ankles, pulling in the opposite direction, but the plant was too strong. Marlowe howled as his muscles stretched. Thanis cursed. There was only one thing for it. Dropping Marlowe, she bared her teeth, launching herself at the tendril holding him. As she bit down, she tasted vile sap and her tongue went numb, but she didn't stop until the vine ripped in two, the severed stump writhing and spurting. Marlowe dropped back, and Thanis caught him, hoisting him on her shoulder and staggering through the doorway. The wall rose ahead of her, and she clambered up over and away into the dark. By the time they reached Bowerholm, the sun was coming up. The old mansion didn't belong to the Scraps, of course. Its only official occupant was a scatterbrained old woman named Adilla, who swore that the elf folk had built the place, and that one day they would return. Thanis couldn't imagine it. The house and gardens were full of shadows and whispers, of tumbling stone and dry waterways, of arched dead trees that might have bloomed once, but were now just skeletal outlines. The other Scraps jumped up as they entered, gathering round. Adilla fetched her satchel, pulling out a bronze pot wrapped in muslin. She dipped her fingers in and smeared a green balm on Marlowe's arm.
Extract of Pansia root for the swelling and a little drop of elm oil for the pain. I learned this from the elves, you know. They were the best healers, so full of wisdom. I recall one time...
Thanis cleared her throat. The old woman could ramble on for hours if she wasn't interrupted. Adilla blinked, focusing on Marlowe's wound.
Yes, from the elves, she muttered. Though someone told me that they might have got it from the Sylvaneth, the tree people. You saw a Sylvaneth?
Marlowe asked excitedly. The mark on his arm was already starting to fade. Adilla sighed.
No, but I know they used to visit Lifestone once in a long while. They're said to still haunt the forest of the ancients out beyond the Everlight River, though that may be a rumour.
Thanis frowned. She'd heard tales of the Sylvaneth. Towering tree lords, mystical branch witches, and fierce tree revenants. Some of the kids found them thrilling, but she didn't see the appeal. Trees that could think and walk and kill, that was her worst nightmare. Her own room was just along the passage, a square chamber with a skylight in the ceiling. She entered and closed the door, ready to drop. Then something moved in the shadows and she froze.
Show yourself! I've had a long night and I'm not in the mood for games! You mean you're not happy to see me?
A voice asked, a pale face emerging into the light. Casper's black hair was a spiky mess, his cloak loose round his skinny body, but his hollow eyes flashed with delight as Thanis strode forwards, grabbing him with both hands and pulling him close.
Where have you been? She demanded. And what are you doing lurking in the dark?
Casper grinned.
I like lurking in the dark, you know that. I've been worried, Thanis said. We thought you'd been caught or hurt or...
I was caught, Casper said. Me, the best thief in Lifestone. Embarrassing. But I broke into the arbor. I know we always said it was too risky because of that old man, the Shadowcaster. I remember your exact words.
Of all the spooky loners in this city, he's the spookiest.
I may have changed my mind, Thanis said, thinking of the botanist and his carnivorous plants.
Well, it turns out he's not so spooky anyway, Casper said. In fact, he's kind of amazing. I don't know why I broke in. I suppose I felt like a challenge. And I figured there'd be artifacts in there, healer's stuff from the old days. And there were. But he found me before I could steal any of it. Actually, it was this boy who caught me. His name's Elio, the Shadowcaster's pupil. Nice kid, but sort of serious. Anyway, they were discussing what to do with me when the boy saw my birthmark and his eyes went all big, like... He demonstrated, and Thanis laughed.
Vertigan. That's the Shadowcaster's real name. He said he'd been looking for kids with a mark like that.
Elio is one, and Vertigan too. He said they're important.
When all the marks are brought together, something will happen. Something that can help the city, and maybe even the whole realm.
But I've got a mark like that too,
Thanis said, exposing her wrist.
I know, Casper grinned. That's what I told Vertigan, and he wants to meet you.
Thanis stared into his shadowy grey eyes. Had he been magicked somehow? Had this Vertigan put a spell on him?
I'm still me, Casper insisted, as though reading her thoughts. I promise.
Thanis reached beneath her blanket, pulling out the tiny pouch she kept there and dropping the coin it contained into her palm. Faces, I'll come with you and see this Vertigan for myself, she said. Crowns, I'm staying here.
Casper smiled. Fair enough.
Thanis balanced the coin on her fingers, willing it to pick the right path. Then she flipped and watched it spiral up into the air. Chapter 1. The Burn. Elio lay on the balcony beneath the dome, his brown eyes wide and sightless. Thanis crouched, touching his cheek. His skin was cold. Kiri leaned in, inspecting the purple-veined burn in the centre of the boy's forehead. Alish clutched his hand and Casper just looked away, biting his lip. The mark had been made by a fragment of warpstone, a mystical crystal that the rat-lord Creech had pressed into Elio's head. They barely escaped the Skaven, fleeing back to their home at the arbor, the crumbling palace in the city of Lifestone. At first, Elio's wound hadn't seemed too serious, just a fading red circle. But then he'd passed out, here on the high platform under the dome of the Athenaeum, the great library that lay at the arbor's heart.
We should go to his father, Kiri said, breaking the silence. We should ask him for help.
I think Lord Elias might be a bit busy,
Casper said, gesturing down through the colored glass. In the valley beyond the city walls, spectral lights blazed, surrounded by legions of shadowy figures. The Dark Army had come in the night, encircling the city.
What do they want? Thanis wondered out loud. And why aren't they attacking? Look at those ladders, those siege engines. They could scale the walls any time they wanted. It's not like the Lifestone defenders could do anything about it.
That's exactly why we should find Lord Elias now, Kiri argued, before things get even worse.
But Elio told us not to,
Alish protested, squeezing the boy's hand.
He said they haven't spoken in ages.
This is more important than some family squabble, Kiri insisted. The Lord will have money and he'll know the best healers. But there are no good healers left in Lifestone,
Dennis argued. They all went away when everything changed. None of them knew what had happened to the city in which they lived. In recent decades, it had gone from a thriving place of learning and healing to a half-deserted ruin. The only one who might have known was their master Vertigan, but he'd been kidnapped by the Skaven on the orders of a mysterious woman, leaving only his staff behind. Thanis is right, Casper said. There are some who claim to be medics, but they're just as likely to make him worse. And this isn't some ordinary burn. It's a magical injury. Adilla would know what to do, Thanis told him, remembering the old woman from Bower Home. But she was gone now, passing away peacefully in her sleep, just a few weeks after Thanis and Casper left for the arbor. She always said the elf folk were the best healers, them and the Sylvaneth. Kiri looked surprised. The walking trees, they're a myth, aren't they? They're real, Thanis said. They're meant to live out beyond the stone woods, past the Everlight River. The place the old folks call the Forest of the Ancients. They even used to come to Livestone in the times before. Remember the story Marlowe used to love, about the foolish thief who hid his gold in the forest, and the Sylvaneth turned him into a tree? But they let his son go, Thanis reminded him. The babe, remember? The tree folk left him outside the city walls. They were kind because he was so little. Elio's not a baby, Kiri pointed out, and the woods are dangerous. I heard men had disappeared out there. So what are we meant to do? Thanis asked, a strange certainty building inside her. Just sit here and watch him suffer? I mean, I hate trees and nature and all of that stuff. The thought of seeing a Sylvaneth scares me to death, but it's Elio's life we're talking about. He saved us in the Warren. Now it's our turn to help him. And what about the army camped outside our walls? Casper asked. Are we meant to fight our way through? Thanis cursed. She hadn't thought of that.
Alish said nervously. I might have a way we could get out of the city.
And she lowered her gaze down into the old library, where a large black shape hung suspended in the shadows.
Are you joking? Casper asked. Please tell me you're not serious.
Alish had been working on her flying machine for months, but so far she'd been unable to get it off the ground. It was a huge, unwieldy thing, the patched canvas balloon supporting a wooden gondola festooned with steam pipes and furnaces.
I'm this close to making it work, Alish insisted, holding up her thumb and forefinger. Give me one night and in the morning we'll fly out of here.
Kiri frowned dubiously.
You're sure we wouldn't just crash?
Alish nodded.
I'm sure. We can save him, I swear.
Thanis gritted her teeth.
I'm in, she said. I trust you, Alish.
Me too, Kiri said. But this is a big decision. Not just the airship, but the tree people too. Everyone has to agree or we don't go. They looked at Casper, who gave a long, uncertain sigh.
Well, he said at last, I suppose if we all die horribly, there'll be no one left to say I told you so.
They made Elio comfortable on the floor of the Athenaeum, covering him with blankets and stacking pillows beneath his head. His skin was ashen and his breathing was shallow, twisted purple vines snaking from the centre of his burn. Kiri volunteered to watch over him while Alish started work on her flying machine, its pipes hissing as she stoked the boiler.
Watching her won't make it any less terrifying, Casper said, taking Thanis's arm. Come on, let's try and get some sleep.
They wound through the corridors of the arbor towards their respective sleeping quarters.
I hope the scraps are okay, said Thanis as they turned into the old armory. I promised to check in this week, then all this happened.
They'll cope, Casper said. Marlowe's turning into quite a leader. I hear Scarlet Shadow tried to recruit him. He turned them down, of course. He's a sharp one.
He learned that from his hero, Thanis said. Don't blush, it's true. He loved how you always kept a level head, even when everything was going crazy. I wish I could say the same. But I'm scared, Casper. Vertigan's gone, Elio's sick, and our only plan is to get in some crazy flying thing and look for a race of talking trees who will almost certainly murder us.
I even lost my lucky penny, the one that convinced me to come here in the first place.
Casper leaned forwards, touching her ear. When he drew back, there was a coin shining in his palm.
Must have been hiding back there all along.
Thanis laughed.
Where did you really find it?
It fell from your pocket in the Warren. I meant to give it back to you, but I forgot.
You're always looking out for me, aren't you?
Thanis asked. Whatever happens, you're there.
Of course, Casper said.
And I always will be. One of us falls, the other one catches them. Whatever happens, remember that.
His face had grown suddenly serious, one hand sliding beneath his robe, touching something at his chest. Thanis saw a string around his neck and wondered, when did Casper start wearing a pendant? But then he turned away and the moment passed.
See you bright and early, he said, striding off down the passage.
Thanis watched him go. There was no one she trusted more than Casper. He'd saved her neck countless times, and she saved his. So why did she feel a sudden chill deep inside, as though something terrible was going to happen?
Because something terrible is going to happen, she reasoned.
We're about to be eaten by trees.
Sighing, she entered a room and closed the door. Chapter 2. A Flock of Ravens. Kiri came at dawn, crouching beside the giant's breastplate that Thanis slept in and shaking her gently. She surfaced slowly from dark dreams of scampering skaven and tall murderous shrubs. Alice reckons we're ready to fly, Kiri said, looking round the armory at the rows of elven pikes and dwarden hammers, silver swords and wooden longbows, shields painted with 1,000 different sigils. Her weapon of choice was a catapult, and she was a superb shot. But she was clad in just a simple tunic, so Thanis got to her feet, lifted down a coat of looped leather, and handed it to Kiri.
This should fit you.
Kiri slipped it over her head. It's perfect. Thanis' own breastplate was emblazoned with the twin-tailed comet of Sigma. She strapped it on, along with a pair of giant steel gloves. She flexed her fingers and the metal creaked, but there was no time to oil them now. She grabbed Vertican's staff and headed for the door. Then a thought struck her, and she paused.
Are you going to be the leader now? She asked Kiri. I mean, someone needs to be. Alice is too young and Casper's smart, but he's reckless. He needs someone to keep him in line. You got us out of the Skaven, Warren. You and Elio.
Kiri blushed. I only just got here. I shouldn't be telling you all what to do.
But Alice looks up to you, Thanis said. And if it makes any difference, I'd choose you too, especially for this. You spent a whole year in the wilderness. I've never been outside the city.
But you're strong, Kiri said. The toughest of all of us. Maybe you should lead.
Thanis shook her head quickly. I'm okay in a fight, but I really don't like making decisions.
Kiri laughed. How about the two of us agree to do everything we can to keep the others safe? Thanis thought about it, and then she nodded. It's a deal. In the Athenaeum, the airship hung on its moorings, suspended above the cracked stone floor. The gondola was a wooden oval, the shape Thanis imagined a boat to be, with tapered ends and an ashwood railing. On its prow, the stuffed head of a griffhound snarled fiercely, and inside was a winding network of cogs and gauges and pipes, steam gushing up into the patchwork balloon that hung overhead, attached to the gondola by a complex series of ropes and struts. Alice and Casper were helping Elio in. He was awake, but weak, grasping at the rickety rope ladder.
Alice says we go into the forest,
he told Thanis as she approached.
Off on a trip.
Sure, she said awkwardly.
I couldn't tell him the truth,
Alice whispered when he was settled.
He'd only try and stop us.
Kiri nodded. If it works, he'll be cured and then we can tell him. If it doesn't, she hoisted her leg over the railing, dropping inside. Thanis followed, trying not to touch anything.
Now these are the pressure gauges,
Alice said, gesturing to a row of dials attached to small steel tanks.
They control how high we go or how low. And this here,
she gestured to a spoked upright wheel,
controls the steering paddle so we can turn.
You'll be the one flying it though, right? Casper asked. You did build it.
Of course, Alice said. I'm just telling you how everything works in case something happens. Okay, hang on now. I'm going to take her up.
She strode the length of the gondola, twisting dials and checking gauges as the pipes hissed overhead. It reminded Thanis of someone playing a complicated musical instrument, albeit one that could explode and kill them all if Alice hit the wrong note. The skin of the balloon began to tighten, ropes creaking as they rose into the air. Amazingly, it was working. Then there was a thunk, and they stopped. Thanis peered up.
Please don't tell me you forgot about the ceiling, Alice laughed.
Of course not. Here, pull this.
She handed over a length of rope, smiling encouragingly. Thanis gave a tug, and high above them cogs began to whir, machinery grinding deep inside the walls. She saw iron counterweights descending all around the Athenaeum, and looking up she saw the dome cracking into segments and folding back like a flower, steel petals opening to the sky. It was a magnificent sight. "We're flying," Kiri said as they drifted up, the mooring ropes falling away. "I don't believe it." They rose through the open dome and Alish grinned.
"Neither do I."
A shaft of sunlight pierced the clouds as they rose over the arbour, with the mountains rising peak on stony peak behind them. The city of Lifestone was spread below like parchment, the streets forming complex circular patterns. Thanis had never noticed it before, but the three main streets seemed to mirror the shape of a concentric rune with a line through it, the same one Elio bore, the mark of Gairan. They lifted over the arbour's wall, those strange, almost man-like stone figures standing guard over the palace in the city below. Alish turned the wheel and they curved around the peak of a tower, a pair of bright-eyed goshawks squawking as they passed. Thanis could see their nests in the eyrie, hatchlings gazing in wonder as the strange ship floated by. Then she looked past the city walls to the army beyond, and her heart tightened. They were like a dark swarm, filling the valley so densely that not a scrap of open ground could be seen. Tattered banners flew above siege engines built of blackwood, and ugly trebuchets rose on both sides of the river. But the soldiers themselves were indistinct, a scuttling mass wreathed in shadow. Suddenly, Elio gave a shout, ducking into the gondola.
"My father," he said, gesturing. "I really don't think he'd approve of me flying."
Lord Elias stood on the battlements, the fountain of his armour gleaming in the sun. He shielded his eyes as the strange shape drifted overhead, and Thanis gave a wave. The Lord did not respond. Then they were above the dark army, and Alish took them higher, soaring towards the clouds. Shouts and catcalls sounded in the valley, and Thanis saw arrows arcing through the air, but they were too high to be a target. All the Dark Legions could do was yell and point. Then Kiri raised a hand, pointing into the distance.
"What's that? A cloud or..."
"That's no cloud," Alish said.
"It's moving too fast. And is cawing,"
Casper pointed out. Thanis heard it too. A growing clamour of hoarse cries. She could make out shapes in the dark mass. They were birds, she realised, swarming closer. Then the ravens were upon them, shrieking and flapping as they dive-bombed the gondola. Their eyes were black, and so were their feathers, like scraps of pure darkness given form and a kind of hideous scratching life. The sun was blotted out as they descended, moving in waves around the airship. One swept close to Thanis, claws outstretched, and she struck out with the staff. The bird let out a strangled squawk and plummeted. Another flapped towards Elio, pecking at his forehead as though drawn to the violet scar. Thanis heard a twang, and the raven squawked, dropping to the floor of the gondola. Kiri reloaded her catapult. Casper knelt over the fallen raven, inspecting it with horrified fascination.
"The mark! On the wings! Look!"
Thanis peered closer. He was right. The birds weren't entirely black. Their wings were patterned with silver, forming a single runic symbol. Casper drew back his sleeve, exposing his own birthmark.
"It's the same," he said. "The rune of Shaiish. The realm of death," Thanis said softly.
Then there was a thud, and the airship juddered, steam pumps grinding. They were losing altitude, drifting down towards the waiting army. She saw faces peering up, red eyes glaring hungrily. Some of the soldiers were very pale and thin, and they waved swords in their stick-like arms. Alish reached out for the controls.
"One of those birds must have got in the works. I can fix it, I just..."
More ravens swooped in suddenly, angling towards Alish as though they knew what she was trying to do. They pecked and clawed, tangling in her hair, wings flapping at her face. Thanis sprang forwards, grabbing a raven in each of her gloved fists and yanking them away, strands of Alish's hair still clutched in their vicious swiping claws. The birds writhed and screeched, but Thanis held them firmly, flinging them over the side of the airship. Kiri joined her, and they formed a defensive wall around Alish as she checked the gauges, banging on the pipes with the flat of her hand, trying to shift the blockage. More of the birds plunged in, but Kiri aimed her catapult, taking two of them down in quick succession. Thanis hefted Vertigan's staff and felt three satisfying collisions as she swung it around, and another two as she brought it back down. Casper had grabbed one of the mooring ropes and was swinging it like a whip, striking ravens left and right. Then Alish gave a victorious shout, and the steam pumps caught, vapour gushing up into the balloon. They rose once more, and the ravens peeled away, retreating in a tattered flock.
"That's right," Alish said, shaking a fist. "Don't you mess with the crew of the—"
She let out a cry, slapping herself on the forehead. "I forgot. Before we took off, I wanted to give this old thing a name. Do you think it's bad luck to do it once you're already in the air?"
"Of course not," Kiri said. "How about the flying junk pile?"
"I prefer the death trap," Casper said. "Or, I know, the please don't crash and kill us all."
Alish glowered at him.
"We should call it something that reminds us of where we came from," Thanis said. "How about the Pride of Lifestone?"
"That's a bit serious," Alish said.
"What about the Arbor Seed? It does look a bit like a seed pod after all."
"Arbor Seed," Kiri nodded. "I like it."
"Me too," Thanis smiled. "Elio, how about you? Any more suggestions?"
He was slumped on the floor, his eyes shut. He must have lost consciousness during the attack, Thanis thought, but we were all too busy to notice. They knelt at his side, making him as comfortable as they could. The mood turned grim once more as the Arbor Seed rose until they were almost touching the clouds. The city had dropped away behind them, the army dwindling too. Below them, all Thanis could see was an ocean of trees stretching to the far horizon. Most were as big as buildings, their roots and branches coiled around one another. Between them she could see glimmers of light, swarms of sparks flitting among the shadowed trunks. And there were other kinds of movement too, large shapes pushing through the undergrowth, the branches rustling as they went.
"Look," Alish said softly, "that must be the Everlight."
The river wound through the green land, a twisting grey ribbon. It was poorly named, Thanis thought. There was no light in that dark, grim water. She bit her lip as they sailed closer, wondering what in Sigmar's name they thought they were doing.
Chapter 3. Strongstem and Lithroot. Kiri peered into the sky. "It's past midday. We should think about setting down." Alish frowned.
"The thing about that is, well, I've been so busy trying to get this thing to go up, I didn't really think very much about how to get it down again."
"It's not like there are lots of places to land anyway," Thanis said. "It's just trees everywhere."
"What about there?" Casper suggested, pointing to a patch of exposed stony ground between the trunks of two huge blackwood oaks. Alish looked dubious, but she nodded.
"I can give it a try, but you should all hang on."
She grasped the wheel, steering the Arbor Seed around a pair of jutting moss pines. Then she twisted a dial and they descended, brushing the tops of the trees.
"Considering it's your first time, you're pretty good at this," Kiri said.
Alish blushed.
"Well, I built her, so I know how everything works.
There was a bone-shaking crunch as the gondola smacked into a heavy branch, almost tipping them out. The balloon let out a hiss, and looking up, Thanis saw a puncture in the side, with steam pouring from it. They dropped suddenly, ropes tangling in the bare branches. The gondola hit the ground, steam billowed around them, and Alish twisted the cogs frantically until it subsided.
"You were saying?" Casper asked dryly as they caught their breath. Alish shrugged sheepishly.
"We're down, aren't we?"
Thanis looked around. The trees loomed on every side, blocking the light from the watery sun.
"Please tell me we'll be able to take off again. I really don't want to be stuck here."
Alish looked at the twisted balloon.
"We'll have to patch up that hole and someone might have to climb up and cut a few of those branches back, but..."
There was a low rumble and the tree shook as though in a strong wind.
"I think it heard us,"
a voice whispered, and they turned. Elio was sitting up, rubbing his eyes. His hair was matted with sweat, and his burn glowed an angry reddish purple, but his eyes were clear as he looked around.
Where are we? I remember something about a trip and my father, but it's all so hazy.
Fannis helped him to his feet. Don't get mad, but we're in the forest. We've come to ask the Silverneff to heal you. Elio's mouth dropped.
But they're dangerous. Don't you know the story of the foolish thief?
That's what I said, Casper put in. They didn't listen. We didn't have a choice, Fannis argued. You're getting sicker. We didn't know what else to do. Kiri climbed cautiously out of the gondola, dry leaves crunching beneath her boots. So how do we find these tree people? Casper helped Elio down behind her. You don't find the Silverneth, he said. They find you. Suddenly, Elio gave a shout and Fannis turned, expecting to see him clutching the burn on his forehead. But instead, he was staring down at his birthmark, more surprised than hurt. He touched it gingerly.
The moment I touched the ground, it started to tingle. Does anyone else feel anything?
They all shook their heads. Elio faced the wall of trees.
Look, I know this is crazy, but I think it wants me to go that way.
Casper squinted at him.
Are you sure that burn hasn't muddled up your mind?
But Kiri shook her head. The same thing happened to me in the slave camp. I felt this, I don't know, this calling. It was like my mark was speaking to me, except I couldn't hear it, only feel it. But it led me to Gyron, and eventually to Lifestone. If Elio's mark says we go that way, I say we trust it. The trees were densely packed, interspersed with thorny thickets and patches of briar, but there was a way between them. Not quite a path, more of a natural opening. Elio and Kiri stepped inside, and Fannis was about to follow when Casper took her arm.
Are you sure about this?
He hissed.
Following a birthmark? It's crazy, isn't it?
She nodded slowly.
I guess so. But Kiri seems sure, and we've used them to find each other, haven't we? I don't know, it feels right somehow. Come on, I'll protect you.
At first, the going was fairly easy, the five of them moving through pools of shifting shadow and milky light. But soon the trees began to close in, their knotted branches interlocking overhead like a grey-green roof. The ground was sometimes rocky and uneven, at other times soft and squelchy with patches of moss that sucked at their feet. One time, Thanis's boot sank so deep that she had to use both hands to pull it free, and as she was doing so, she felt something moving, like fingers brushing against her ankles. She tugged her boot out and hurried on. There were sounds in the forest too. Deep creaks and moans that were neither plant nor animal, but something in between. Chattering swarms of bright fireflies seemed to form shapes as they spiraled in the sunlight. Faces, creatures, towers. Vines clung to the trunks of trees like exposed veins. Blood-dark blooms bursting open as they passed, letting out a soft sigh. They stopped in a little glade, waiting while Elio got his breath back. The clearing was dappled in sunlight and ringed with towering yellow-green fronds, the mulchy ground shrouded in a layer of clinging fog. That's odd, Fannis thought. There was no mist elsewhere in the forest, only here.
It's getting late, Casper said. I think we should go back.
Kiri frowned.
But what about the Silverneth? We have to find them, or this whole thing's been a waste of time.
He's right. If night comes, we should be in the Arborseed.
Fannis said.
We can defend ourselves in there if anything tries to, you know.
Elio, what about you? Alish asked. Do you feel any?
With a sigh, Elio dropped to the ground like a puppet whose strings had been cut. He landed on his back in a carpet of gold, disturbing the mist around him. His eyes were blank, and the burn on his forehead was bright red.
Hey, Kiri said, kneeling and touching his face. Elio, can you?
The ground shook suddenly, almost throwing Fannis off her feet. She steadied herself, looking fearfully around the clearing. The slender plants encircling them seemed to weave and sway in an almost hypnotic dance. There was a series of pops and clouds of yellow dust exploded into the air, clouding Thanis's vision. She began to sneeze uncontrollably, her eyes streaming. Then Alish gave a scream.
He's moving! Look, it's got him!
She was right. Elia was sliding unconsciously over the soft ground, dragged by a yellow frond locked fast around his ankle.
There was a horrible wet slurping sound and a series of mouth-like holes opened in the damp ground, ringed with bulbous petals.
This whole clearing was one giant plant, Thanis realised, a massive growth trying to suck them all in.
Kiri loaded her catapult, but there was nothing to aim at. Just vines and tendrils and a fog of stinging pollen.
Tendrils lashed towards Thanis and she swung the staff, crying out in horror.
Get back, you horrid—
Enough!
The voice was deafening. The ground shook with the force of it, and the snaking vines stopped abruptly. A shadow moved beyond the clearing, but Thanis couldn't make it out.
Who's there?
She asked.
Who are you?
Who am I?
The voice boomed.
Who are you?
It seemed to emanate from all around them, dry and rough like scraping roots and falling timber.
Kiri took a step,